Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton, Executive Director of the James Dobson Family Institute and President of the American Association of Christian Counselors. What unique and unprecedented times these are. The simplicity and hope of the gospel seem a little sweeter, certainly a little more precious during these times of uncertainty. Our hope remains secure in Jesus Christ, and that brings me comfort, great comfort. I wanted to take a moment to let you know that we here at the James Dobson Family Institute love you and we're praying for you. If you're struggling and need some encouragement, we'd be honored to pray with you. You can call us toll-free at 877-732-6825 or simply go to drjamesdobson.org.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and this is Family Talk. I come to you today with a very heavy heart about what's happening to our great country. You know, I've lived through some tough times during my years on this earth, but I think this is one of the most dangerous and discouraging days that I can remember. There are 40 million people out of work, and the coronavirus still stalks the land. 108,000 people have died, and it's my understanding that 2 million more are struggling with the disease. And now, of course, the country is divided like no time since the Civil War. Now there is violence and lawlessness raging in the cities. The background for all this, of course, is the senseless killing of a black man, George Floyd, who died crying, "I can't breathe," while people stood and watched. That has led to riots and looting and arson, which is being inflicted on people who had nothing to do with the murder. If there ever was a time for our country to be in prayer, this is it. Now, we're going to hear today the views and comments of one of my favorite senators in the U.S. Senate. And he's going to join us today by phone. I want to tell you that I admire this man greatly. I am deeply honored to have Senator Tim Scott on the phone with us. He is a Republican from South Carolina, and he is the first African-American in history to ever serve on both the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. He is passionately pro-life, and he's championed many common sense initiatives through the years. I want to tell you, I'm very proud of this man. Senator, I think you're on the phone, right?
Yes, sir. Dr. Dobson, let me just say what I've always thought, which is that you have been a profound leader for our nation for decades. I have been blessed by your presence, by your wisdom, and by your just willingness to share your life in a very public fashion. You have never disappointed us. And I am incredibly thankful for all that you have done and continue to do. It is a dark night in our country, but I am thankful that joy comes in the morning, and I'm looking forward to a very bright day in the weeks and days ahead.
Well, thank you, Senator, for those very kind words. And it's why I wanted to talk to you today. And I'm so pleased that you made time for us. I know that there must be hundreds of reporters and commentators who are standing in line to talk to you. So let's get right to it. I want you to address the tragedy that's unfolding even as we speak. Millions of people around the world share a sense of outrage at the merciless killing of George Floyd, the father of several children, including a six-year-old girl. And we saw him lying face down on the street with the knee of the police officer in his neck. It was one of the most disturbing images ever seen on the media. So we all feel the injustice of that killing, and we can identify with the rage of African Americans and others who flooded onto the streets. That's a constitutional right to protest, and it was called for in this situation. But this murder has led to a mob mentality that's utterly lawless and violent. And I see it as a thin veneer of civility that's broken down. Give us your take on what's happening at this time.
Well, I think, Dr. Dobson, it's impossible to start a conversation without first acknowledging what really has been the trigger for all that we see around the country, which is another senseless death of an African-American man at the hands of the police. That has been an unfortunate reality for all of my life. I've been watching this unfold, this time with video. So it brings a new level of validation to the cries of so many people within the African-American community. That does not in any way, shape, or form condone any violence. As a matter of fact, George Floyd's brother, Terrence, spoke out, I think, incredibly on Monday, asking for calm in the streets, that there's nothing that's being done from a violent perspective that will ever bring back his brother. And there's nothing being done with all of the vitriol from the agitators that is even helpful to the conversation that we need to have as a nation. And I would like to separate protesters and demonstrators from these violent agitators that have nothing to do with George Floyd or, frankly, justice from the challenges that we face as a nation. What you're actually seeing on TV, the violent folks, those people are selfishly distracting from George Floyd's death and at the same time trying to accomplish a very different objective. And from my perspective, that objective is either anarchy or chaos, and they are cousins. So that has nothing to do with the peaceful protest of brutality at the hands of people that we give ultimate life and death decisions and the authority to execute. So two very different conversations.
I do hope that the people of America will separate those two things, because the pain and the agony of people who watched that man die, with everybody standing around looking at him and him crying for help and crying for air. I mean, that's awful. It's horrible. But there is something else going on here, and it's violence for violence's sake. You know, I was thinking this morning, violence breeds violence.
Yes.
And we have friends here in Colorado who live just a few miles away from us that sent me a letter a day or two ago that was posted on the doors of everybody in their neighborhood. All the houses had this statement. Let me read it. "Democrat, hear the call. The time for action is near. Republicans are enslaving, killing the brown man. You are next. Warmongering Republicans understand only one thing, war. It's time to eliminate them before they kill us all. We must act now to save the world. Republicans are not actual humans. They are subhumans, and God approves the killing of them. So no border, no wall, no USA at all. Reject whiteness. Reject greed. Death to America is all we need." It goes on for two pages, rambling like that. Boy, there is a wickedness out there that is very, very dangerous, isn't there?
There is. I had not heard that before, but without any question, as an African-American who happens to be a Republican, I think the racial overtones and condemnation of the Republican Party is a representation of evil in the words and the thoughts of the person who wrote that salacious at best, demonic at worst letter to his neighbors or her neighbors, or frankly, likely, they don't live in the places where they pass the letters out. Yeah. It is just awful to hear someone with that kind of venom towards people they've never met. I liken it to racial hatred of people that you hate because of the color of their skin. That is demonic. And frankly, to hate someone because of the partisan affiliation is equally as demonic.
Talk about law enforcement as you see it. How much of the anguish and anger at the police across the country, how much of that do you see as valid, and where do we go with that?
Yeah, I would say there's a complicated relationship between the law enforcement officers and the African-American community and communities of color, having the chance to talk with so many folks and then having lived through 7 stops as an African-American driving a car by law enforcement officers, as a elected official being stopped by law enforcement officers, as a United States senator trying to enter into the Senate buildings, wearing my Senate pin, they just didn't believe me. There is a complicated and emotional attachment to the fact that the discrimination that so many of us have felt is real. The solution to it, I think, is multifaceted and layered. But the vast majority, and I've had years and years of experience with law enforcement, the vast majority of officers have one objective. It's to do their jobs and go home. It's those apples, one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. There's no doubt that I think it's more than one, but there is a strong minority of officers that are casting shadows over all of law enforcement. The problem is it's been this way for all of my life, and that's where you're seeing the type of energy and emotion, not violence, but energy and emotion that really want to have a civil conversation about bringing justice and fairness to the system. That has to be a separate conversation that is hard to have while you're having violence in the streets, watching people break windows, violate buildings and other people's rights. It's hard to watch. And I just think to myself that equally as hard to watch is an officer with the knee on the neck, with the hands tied behind the back, laying on your stomach. So if you want justice for one, you should want justice for all. And as you said, violence only begets more violence. We have to turn our attention in a constructive manner towards solutions that have nothing to do with the violence of the agitators who have infiltrated and co-opted the nonviolent protests that we've seen around this country.
How does the police establishment around the country deal with the minority of cops who are guilty of doing what they're accused of doing? That is obviously a minority. That is not the majority. Most of these guys are out there trying to do their jobs, as you said, and to,
yes,
to be honorable men and women. But there is a problem here to be addressed, isn't there?
Yes, sir. Dr. Dobson, the fastest way to do it is what I saw this time. And frankly, I'll say this as well. For the first time in my lifetime, I've seen the majority, if not all of the law enforcement agencies in my state, South Carolina, all their associations have come out condemning the acts of the officer in Minneapolis. The fastest way to get rid of bad officers are for good ones to take a stand against them. That is the only way, frankly, to get rid of bad officers. I say that in every vein, by the way, whether it's officers or church members or politicians. If you're not willing to stand up against those in your own corner, so to speak, your voice is probably not going to be as helpful. And it's the ability to stand against the bad apples on your side, whatever that means to whomever it means it. It is the fastest way for our nation to make progress.
Yeah. Is it true that the people in the other party, the Democrat Party and others, are failing, or at least not speaking as passionately about the violence? They're not condemning it. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but is that what you're hearing?
I'm hearing it, but I don't know if it's accurate either. Here's what I think, though. I think every single leader in the country should start the conversation with George Floyd and specifically and intentionally shift the attention after dealing with George Floyd to go right after the violent protesters. If you are not willing to condemn the violent protesters with the same emotion and passion that you condemn the law enforcement officers, you lose credibility on one side. And if you're not willing to condemn George Floyd and the death of George Floyd, as well as condemning the violence in the streets on the other side, you lose credibility, and you should. So I have always started my conversations off with George Floyd, and I quickly pivot to the violence in the streets, because there's no way I can say the killing of George Floyd was murder, in my opinion, and then to watch four officers laying in the hospital, I believe in St. Louis, watching the police chief of Richmond, Virginia, talk about protesters blocking the way to putting out a fire that put a young child's life in jeopardy, or in Indianapolis, or all over this country, law enforcement officers trying to do their jobs and being in harm's way. If you won't speak out against that, I don't think you have the right to speak out against the violence perpetrated against George Floyd. You have to speak out on both sides, in my opinion, to have credibility.
You know, I remember the riots in Dallas several years ago where five policemen were shot down in cold blood. This story has two sides, doesn't it?
Every single one does. And that's the unfortunate reality, that you have to be willing to have a 360-degree view and then a conversation that leads to understanding. And I will say that 2 Chronicles 7:14, an often quoted verse, still has application today. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves, that's a good way to start. James 4:10, I know your name is Dr. James Dobson. So James 4:10, humbling yourself so the Lord will exalt you, as opposed to exalting yourself so the Lord will humble you. And James 3, being reminded that the tongue is a poisonous, toxic thing. If it's not harnessed, it's going to be the rudder of the ship. And then certainly James 1:5, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. These are things that we should do as leaders. We should push back against the sentiment that there aren't any solutions. We should deny the reality. It's a false reality. It's a false narrative. It's not true that we can't come together. Galatians 3:29 tells me that we're all seeds of Abraham and part of the same family. And if we saw ourselves in that light, Dr. Dobson, as you have been preaching, at least in my ears, for four decades now, we would be a lot better off. We'd have a lot fewer problems and we'd have a lot more solutions.
Well, the solutions begin with prayer. And
yes, sir.
I'm convinced that we're not going to settle this one and get out of the mess that we're in without taking it to the Lord in prayer.
Amen.
And we need to humble ourselves and pray and turn from our wicked ways. Before we go, talk again about your own experience. Have you seen this oppression up close and personal as a child and in your youth?
Yes, sir, Dr. Dobson. I remember 1999, the year I was a vice chairman of the local government, Charleston County government, and I was stopped that year seven times by law enforcement officers, basically wanting to take a look in my car and try to figure out, you know, if I was doing something I shouldn't be doing.
Just because you were black?
Yes, sir. I call it DWD, driving while black, and I'll say that just this year, I was pulled over for using my turn signal too late in the lane change. Interesting concept. And then last year in November, I was pulled over for having my flashers on while I was helping someone look for their phone. I had gotten back in my car, was getting ready to turn my flashers off, and the law enforcement came behind me. And I spoke with the police chief in a different jurisdiction, and they tell me that those are just ways for officers to get a chance to take a look in your car, get the windows down so they can see if there are any drugs in the air. So this type of targeting is not helpful. And frankly, I remember the lessons that I was taught early on, which is I always roll all the windows down, put both of my hands out of the window, recognizing that the officer, for whatever reason he pulls me over, still wants to go home unharmed. And I want to make sure that he understands from me, I want to do him no harm. And so please do me no harm. So I try to be as cooperative as possible. But those are two stories from the last 6 months of my life. And it wow. continues, no matter your position in life.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. You just have the sound of judgment and wisdom and common sense. And I thank you for what you're doing for our country. Consider us a friend, and I'm going to ask that our listeners pray for you and pray for the members of both parties in Washington, that they will act not impulsively to exacerbate the problem, but they will seek a solution that's been eluding us for many, many years.
I'm optimistic, Dr. Dobson, that we are going to get there together. I am very confident that this nation is rising to the occasion. Even if it feels like we've taken a couple of steps back, I think we've taken leaps forward, and the best is yet to come for this nation and for each individual in this nation. The future can be very bright.
Well, you have other interviews that are on hold, no doubt, waiting to talk to you. So thank you for giving us this time and for what you do. I will come by to say hello, and I'm going to give you a hug. Is it okay to hug a senator?
Absolutely. I look forward to the warm embrace, and I also look forward to continuing to increase and deepen our friendship. Much respect I have for you has only been increased and enhanced because of this conversation.
God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, sir, and thank you to all the folks who help us get this together. I know sometimes it's challenging, but you have a great group of folks working with you, and I am appreciative of their skills. I don't have them, so I'm always thankful for people who can do what I can't do and do it well. Thank you.
And God bless America.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Okay.
Take care,
sir.
We'll
talk again, sir.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
A serious look at the racial tension that is rocking our country right now. I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to Dr. Dobson's recent conversation with U.S. Senator Tim Scott here on Family Talk. I pray this discussion spoke to you and highlighted our need for understanding and unity during this special season. Visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org, where you can learn more about Senator Tim Scott and his meaningful work on Capitol Hill. Once you're there, you can also request a CD copy of this interview. Simply click on the Order a CD Copy link to order yours today. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then go to today's broadcast page. Stay up to date on our latest episodes of Family Talk using your Amazon Alexa. This hands-free device allows you to listen to our daily broadcast at any time of the day. Simply enable the Family Talk skill on your account and then say, Alexa, play today's broadcast of Family Talk. It's that easy. Visit drjamesdobson.org/Alexa for step-by-step instructions to play Family Talk on your Amazon Alexa. You know, our chief goal here at Family Talk is to support the institution of marriage and the traditional family unit. The most direct way we can do that is through the Dobson Digital Library. Visit DobsonLibrary.com to access our archive of all of Dr. Dobson's content. You can listen to thousands of radio broadcasts or read our vast catalog of blogs and articles as well. Now, this library tackles topics such as parenting, resolving marital conflicts, and passing on a godly legacy. So whatever your family is facing right now, we have something that can help. I hope you'll take advantage of this great resource by visiting DobsonLibrary.com. Tune in again tomorrow to hear Dr. Dobson's recent conversation with Pastor Brian Gibson. He is the Kentucky minister who has been an outspoken voice for governments to reopen churches around the country. Hear why he thinks COVID-19 and social distancing have created a constitutional crisis for the religious community. It's a fascinating discussion you won't want to miss, and it's coming your way tomorrow on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is Dr. Tim Clinton, Executive Director of the James Dobson Family Institute. Thanks for listening today. We hope you found this program helpful and encouraging. Please remember that our ministry is here to serve you and your family. For more information about our programs and resources, or to learn how you can support us, go to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or call us toll-free, 877-732-6825. I pray that God will bless you in 2020. We're so grateful for your partnership. We ask you to stand with us and to continue to defend the Christian values in an ever-changing culture. Thanks again for joining us. We hope you'll join us again on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This is Roger Marsh. This year marks Family Talk's 10-year anniversary, and to celebrate, we've selected the most popular broadcast over the past decade. We've put these shows on 8 audio CDs and present them to you on Family Talk's 10th anniversary broadcast collection. These entertaining and informative programs are sure to become a cherished part of your family resource library. You'll hear popular interviews that feature Eric Metaxas, Dennis Prager, Shanti Feldhahn, and more in this compelling audio collection. These shows cover a variety of subjects that you care about, from marriage and parenting to culture and the family. This commemorative CD set is yours for a suggested gift of $50 to support the work of Family Talk. Join Dr. Dobson in serving families by calling 877-732-6825. Find out how you can have your own set with the most popular interviews from the first 10 years of Family Talk by calling 877-732-6825. Or you can visit our website at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Thanks for supporting Family Talk and celebrating our 10th anniversary.